Welcome to Better Relationships, Better Work, where we explore how to make work better through the power of relationships. My name's Jason Lauritsen. I'm the author of two books, a leadership trainer and speaker on a mission to fix how we treat people at work. Now, in this episode, we'll explore the important and sometimes complicated relationship between boundaries and trust. We delve into the importance of knowing our own self-worth and value if we truly want to build meaningful, trusting relationships with others. And you'll be reminded of how truly transformative a single positive relationship can be in our lives. My guest this week is Lindsay Ray Cortan. Lindsay Ray is a longtime friend of mine. She's someone who I deeply admire for the impact that she's having on her community through her work. Professionally, she is the CEO of the Ronald McDonald House Charities here in Omaha, where I live, and I currently have the privilege to serve on her board. She's an incredible leader, and I've seen her in action. Now, this was a deeply vulnerable and insightful conversation. I hope you find it as inspiring and moving as I did. Please enjoy my conversation with Lindsay Ray. Lindsay Ray, welcome. Thank you for being here with me.
My pleasure.
I'm going to start this by trying to get to know you a little bit better. And the first question I have for you is, where are you at on the introvert-extrovert scale? What do you consider yourself to be?
So I think that, and I apologize if this isn't the exact, the right word, but is it amnivert when you're an extroverted introvert that you... I don't solely gather a ton of energy just by being around other people, but I really like that environment. I also am an only child, so I don't know if that's the reason why. I just need some space too, and I find energy in solitude in the same way that I find energy around people too. So I like to experience both, and neither of them are a turnoff either. So it's just somewhere in the middle.
I think there's a lot of people probably that relate to that. And I think, I mean, Susan Cain, I think, was the one that gave us that word, or at least made it sort of wildly available to us over the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years or whenever it was she wrote Quiet. But I think a lot of people relate to that. And it's weird because I feel like that's kind of, thankfully, it's given us a third option, but it's almost like too big of a third option anymore. So thank you for explaining it a little more. The reason I ask that is I am curious, because this is a conversation about relationships. How do you think your ambivertness, or how you show up, sort of feel about energy and your relation, how has that impacted how you approach relationships, do you think?
I think that historically, right or wrong or successful or unsuccessful, I've always had this belief that in order to really magnify a relationship that you want, so if it's in business and you're trying to sell, the extroverted person is always going to have the power in the room. And so, which in that case, it's become the way that that plays out for me and has been for a long time. This is like borderline embarrassing. It's a lot of like, perform, 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 attention, attention. I love you. You're great. You're wonderful. Look at me. Like, it's a lot of that kind of energy. And that has served me well when it's matched with competence in what I'm talking about. It has not served me well when I'm doing all of the things and being the extroverted person, but I don't really have anything to back it up with. And so that has come in the form of reflection. And for me, reflection happens most successfully when I am in solitude and I have the opportunity to absorb what has happened or bounce ideas off in a much quieter setting. So I think that it's been a learning curve for me. And also, I think the negative things that can happen when you receive feedback that you might not like, if I'm approaching that in the same extroverted way, I tend to become more aggressive and defensive about something because I haven't had the opportunity to really absorb what's being said and how that could be beneficial. So I hope that answered your question.
Listen, it's your answer, right? It's your experience. I'm always curious about, especially like when you describe that, and I think a lot of people probably relate to that. I know I do, that when you, the way that you show up, right? When you're meeting new people, or you do have to put the jazz hands version kind of together, the transition from that to sort of when you get together one-on-one and it's a different, you're not doing jazz hands, and how that impacts sort of that relationship. And sometimes that's different, right? I mean, there's a dynamic that shifts there, and people are like, wait a minute, this isn't what I expected, right? I expected something different from you. So I don't know if that ever shows up for you in terms of that downshifting. Has that ever impacted your sort of, as you're building new relationships?
I think that there's been a lot of maturity. Maturity is really what has affected that, not necessarily the balance between the introvert and extrovert pieces, because I think that for a long time, I would still feel that performative nature, even if it was one-on-one, because it was a match for what I always thought was the type of person who could close the deal. And so that maturity has manifested itself in the form of confidence. And a thought leader that I follow has always said that confidence is the combination of warmth and competence. If you can put those two things together and you can show that in any way that you're speaking, if you're speaking publicly, if you're speaking one-on-one, that's really what I've landed on. But I don't think that that had to come with making quite a few mistakes, or like reading the room inappropriately, and by inappropriately, I mean, I'm just going to go in and make everybody feel this way. Or the opposite, when that hasn't worked out, I'm not going to say anything at all. And neither of those things have served me. And so it's really just a maturity in the form of confidence that has allowed for a change in behaviors. And what that actually has meant in all of that, in that confidence, it's not my confidence in my own ability to say the right thing or to be the right person. It's my confidence and my ability to adapt. And so that's why I don't feel anymore that there's a disconnect between who I might have been in one situation, but I might be different one-on-one, because my ability to adapt is evident, but not disingenuous, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. It does. So here's a question to get to know you on a pretty, I think, deep level, which is, what's something that you learned about relationships growing up that still shapes how you think about relationships today?
This question, admittedly, immediately sends anxiety in my belly, because my first thought is not, how did a relationship or something that happened that I saw growing up help me in the future? That help didn't come until I stopped repeating the things that I was exposed to in childhood. So, for example, I believed growing up that if you're married, you're supposed to hate your spouse, which means every romantic relationship that I've ever been in has been toxic and push pull, and there's arguing and fighting and things like that. That has changed. So that's what I mean when I feel anxiety about it, because that's what how my behaviors have manifested. It's actually very, very toxic. However, the relationships that I was exposed to in the work environment were wildly different than what was going on in any other work environment, which was also interesting because it's my mom. It's the same person who's showing me this is what a marriage is like and this is what an office can be like. And the way that she ran the office, she would call it the office of non-decorum. And so it was a very open, loving, warm environment at a time when you were supposed to be buttoned up. You were not supposed to be talking about personal things. You were not supposed, this is not your family. That was sort of the expectation. And she went against the norm. So I have these really interesting approaches to relationships, good or bad, that I've taken with me in both areas.
That's an incredible example, because I think that's very counter probably to what the norm would be, right? As we tend to think of work as the place you go for bad relationships, and then you go home to recover, right? That's where it's safe, supposed to be. And so I'm sure that is, has been really interesting for you in terms of a journey. And that's why I find that question really interesting, is it doesn't have to be, it's like whatever it was,
right. Yeah.
That set the foundation for what was coming in the future, right? In the lens you use. So thank you for being so open about that. Now, I'd asked you in advance to think about a couple of different relationships, one being a personal relationship that you felt was a strong, positive, healthy relationship in your life, so that we could dig in on that a little bit and learn from it. So can you tell us a little bit about the relationship that you came to talk to us about today?
Yeah, I would love to share about my relationship with a really good friend. Her name is Amanda. And it's interesting because we sort of met through more of a professional lens. But our friendship is, it's so interesting because we're also in the same industry, but neither of us have a clue about what's going on in our respective industries, but we know everything that's going on in our heart, right? So that's just an interesting dynamic too, particularly because of the size of this town. You would think we would know everything about each other in that way too. Now, what I know is that I know that my mom whispered into her ear while she was really sick and getting ready to pass away. And she told Amanda, please take care of her when I'm gone. And I know that my mom said that to also the other relationship that we're going to talk about too. The relationship that I have with Amanda is not as strong as it is because that's what my mom said. It's strong in that way because she really took that seriously as part of her obligation as a friend far before my mom ever said it. And the relationship that we have and the reason that it's so powerful in my life is because I can show up as any version of myself at any moment that I am that person, even if it's a deviation from who I normally am, or if it's particularly vulnerable. And she's allowed me to be all of the sides that I have inside of me. And she has embraced all of them and has supported that, and also has been realistic about when I might be looking at something that I could be doing better or whatever. And so that's just a little insight into our friendship.
That's a powerful insight. And I'm curious to learn a little more about what that looks like. Can you think of a specific example without revealing any, you know, uncomfortable details, but a specific example of that stands out in your mind of when you showed up and maybe you wouldn't expect generally someone's going to reach out and embrace you, or however it went down, and she, like, what she did or how she showed up in that makes you feel so strongly about it?
There's so many different instances, but I will choose the moment. I mean, really everything from during COVID, my son was turning 3 and we couldn't have a birthday party. And so she immediately jumped in and helped to find solutions because I was too overwhelmed with the whole thing. And so that's things like that that don't seem like they're that significant, but are, because it made an impact on several people. And that's just sort of the nurturing nature of who she is. And so there's a lot of instances like that, but there's one moment. And this is really, you know, more about my personality. I've always, in any scenario, I have sort of positioned myself as always being the strongest person in the room, and the strongest person in the room doesn't break down. The strongest person in the room doesn't admit when they're scared, and doesn't admit when they might have done something wrong, but don't really know what that wrong thing was. And so there was a time that I broke down. I was like violently bawling, and that's so different from any, like, even when I think about it now, it's an even talking about it is uncomfortable because I've sort of conditioned and curated this part of my personality that doesn't allow for that in any scenario. And she not only embraced it, but encouraged it, and then just let me feel all of it. And there was no judgment. There was no, nothing was patronizing. It was someone who was truly just allowing someone else to release everything that needed to be released. And what's so beautiful about what she brings to the table is that she's also mature enough in her own understanding and self-awareness, which I really admire, that it's not, she's not going to absorb all of that and now make it like a codependent relationship that she has to fix. It was the most empowering thing to be able to be all of those things and still have the, her confidence in me that I wasn't a loser and I wasn't incapable of coming out of it, and it didn't match it, and she knew all of that. And that's what I mean as far as just letting me be allowed to feel and still be respected.
That's beautiful. If you had to distill that into sort of what you've learned through this relationship about, you know, things that you can take forward into other relationships, how to sort of foster better relationships, be a better friend for others. What would be the lesson in this or lessons in this that you would say you've learned?
You know, it really is about allowing the right, I got really lucky that it was her, because one of the things that I've really struggled with that has gotten me into a lot of the tangles that I've been in are having a lack of boundaries. And that, and by that are weak boundaries. And what I mean by that is there's no boundaries. I don't mean that as far as boundaries that I need to impress upon other people. It's boundaries with myself. So I've been accustomed to really allowing what you allow you teach, right? So teaching a lot of people that it's okay to do these things that are probably bad because I'm not going to say anything about it because I would rather not hurt them or make that person uncomfortable. So I'm just, and I can tolerate anything. So I'm going to take all of that in. And what she taught me is that you can set up boundaries around yourself to protect yourself. And when you do that, what you're really protecting is your own serenity. So I remember this exercise. It was actually one of the trainings that she and I got chosen to be in. And there was they made us put a name or a bunch of names, whatever names you come up with inside of a circle that says, who do you have unwavering trust? Name some people. I didn't put anybody down when we did that exercise the first time. I put zero people down. And really that wasn't a reflection of anybody else. It's not like everyone in the world is untrustworthy. It was because I didn't trust myself. And so the biggest lesson that I got from her was that you can trust yourself, and I'm going to give you the example of what kind of benefit that can bring to your life. And that benefit in trusting myself is that I can open myself up to her, and she has confirmed that trusting myself is something that is okay. And she's really been instrumental in building that foundation in a whole bunch of new habits, new practices. I have a completely different life. And I think that that goes all back to her helping me to see that.
This webcast is sponsored by my longtime friends at Inspiring Workplaces. Now, if you are someone who's working to create an engaging and inspiring workplace for your employees, and of course you are, that's why you're here, then listen up. Inspiring Workplaces is a global community of tens of thousands of HR and employee experience professionals that you can join for free. As a member, you will gain access to thousands of articles and videos and podcasts and events that will help you change the world by changing the world of work. They are also home to the Inspiring Workplaces Awards that recognize the best workplaces in the world. You can learn about the application process at their website. So please go visit inspiring-workplaces.com to learn more and to join the community. That's inspiring-workplaces.com. I think the takeaway for anyone listening to this is going to be, I need to find a friend like Amanda, maybe.
Yes.
I don't know. But that's thank you for that. That's awesome. We're going to come back. We're going to come back to this learning in a minute. But before we do that, I said there were two relationships I asked you to think about. One is a work relationship, a relationship that you formed through work that has had a significant positive impact on you or your career. So tell me a little bit about that relationship.
So this was actually the hardest for me to choose because I feel really strongly about how much I love the relationships I have at work. It's a really beautiful and healthy dynamic. And I mean healthy, like it's wholes, which means that there's resistance that comes in, there's crucial conversations that still have to happen, but there's an appreciation for all of those things that really builds up just how special so many of the relationships that I do have at work. And that extends not just from employees, but also with board members and things like that. So I chose the person I've had the longest relationship with because I couldn't choose because everyone was great. So her name is Tina, and she and I have been working side by side. I've actually never done anything for as long as I've had this job, which means this is the longest. I mean, I've never lived in the same place this long. I've never had a job this long. So the fact that she and I have been doing this side by side and walking through the various fires that come up with being at any place of employment for 10, 12 years, we've walked through it together. Her name is Tina, and she is the second person. When I did the second exercise with the circle, when I went back to the training again a second time, those were the only two names that made it. So Amanda was one and Tina was the second. And the power of that relationship also came through circumstantial evidence where both of us had to rely on unwavering loyalty in a really uncomfortable time. And both of us had several opportunities to completely abandon each other. And we could have, and it would have probably been in for good reason. And we chose not to, and we chose unwavering trust. And that, I believe, is what has created the fabric for all of the other relationships that we have here to form and to flourish also.
So give me an example of, well, I guess let me back up. How did you get to that? So this is a person from work. How did you get to a place of unwavering trust? What would you say were the steps that led up, or what happened, and over what period of time did that take place?
I think that we both are very similar in terms of our integrity related to doing what you say that you're going to do and the nature of where we are, you have to. And at the time there were only three of us. So she was running everything with the families. I was running everything with donations and everything else. Neither of us can do our job without the other person, no matter what. So we both knew pretty quickly, I would know, well, if Tina said that this is going to get done, I never have to think about it again. And she had the same trust in me. So there was a consistency in those examples that took that we both got to experience. But I think that it's not like that happened for 2 weeks. We did that consistently every single day. There were things that would come up. And then there were little moments where, you know, maybe somebody might have said something and we immediately could trust that the other person either said that, didn't say that, doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, you could trust that your intuition was right. So that happened over time. And then when it really mattered, that's when everything sort of came into play. Like, so I would say maybe, and both of us walked in pretty cautious about everybody, right? Like we're very similar in personality types in that way. We have similar personality types in that way, meaning that I would say probably a couple of years went by of like very consistent behavior. So we knew that we had that. And then the first time that I think the most significant moment where we had, where it got tested, was when there was some friction with a newer employee, and she called me when I was on vacation at 4:30 in the morning in the location that I was at. That is so out of character for her in terms of like, we, I mean, there's just unwavering trust, right? I didn't even think about what was going on in the office because that's how amazing she was. If she's calling me at any time during vacation, everything stopped. So I was up out of bed. I'm listening to her. I'm watching the sunset on the phone with her as she's talking through what is happening. And it was something, what was going on with her was extremely personal. And that this other person, you know, all of this stuff. And then I got a call the next day. And by the third day, I already knew exactly what needed to happen the second I got back to the office. And it wasn't like she was calling to say, like, you need to do something. I don't know. It wasn't like that at all. She just knew I need to say something. I don't know what to do. I'm self-aware enough to know that it's causing me extreme anxiety, and I'm not sure where to turn. So I'm going to go to the person who's going to listen to me. And then she trusted, no matter, there was no suggestions of this is what I think you should do. There was none of that. I trusted that what she was saying was 100% true. And she trusted that I was going to do whatever was right. And so that's exactly what happened. And that was the first big experience that we had together. And I think that that was just the beginning of what created the bond that we have now.
It's really important. And I think sometimes people miss, you don't think of this as probably a relationship thing. You don't think of it as a trust thing, but consistency in showing up and doing what you say you're going to do, delivering on what you are supposed to deliver on, like that builds trust. It invites trust. And then that sort of greases the wheels towards having a better relationship with someone. Because even if you don't like someone or you disagree, which is not the case for you, if you've got that trust as a foundation, you can generally navigate through that. But you can have all kinds of things in common. But like you said earlier, if you don't trust this person, if they're going to lie to you, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. What a strong foundation. So what would you distill if there was one lesson that we could take from what you've learned in this relationship that you've been able to maybe apply elsewhere, or you've applied in building relationships or fostering relationships elsewhere, what would it be?
You know, I think that what both of those relationships have taught me is that, and I don't mean this to sound like a victim or anything like that, but what they actually have taught me really beautifully is about my own self-worth and really understanding that I do have value. And like I said, I don't mean that in a pity party kind of way, but it is something that I was grown accustomed to thinking, right? Because especially if you're in toxic relationships in general, I tended to question my own value and place value in different places, in codependent places. My value is only there if I am helping somebody, or if I'm working, or if I'm doing something else. And they taught me that it doesn't matter what you're doing on the outside, who you are on the inside is so important and so valuable that it means something to me specifically. And that is what has really helped form my ability to trust in my own intuition. So as a secondary benefit of these relationships, I have stopped questioning my intuition, or rather I stopped overriding my intuition with my ego brain because of them. And they taught me that it is okay to pay attention when something doesn't feel right. It's okay to set a boundary to protect your own serenity if you need to, and you're valuable enough and you're worth it enough. But they could, if anybody, like everything that I just said is nothing that all of us haven't read in some Pinterest quote or on a calendar and all of that stuff. It's wildly different when you experience what it feels like. And I had to experience it through those relationships.
All right. So let's bring this home, right? This is better relationships, better work. And so I want to talk with you about, let's connect the dots on how we can take some of these learnings from your relationships that you've shared and apply them to work, how we can make the work experience or relationship better for people. And so the first sort of overarching lesson that I heard from you is that it's really important to set boundaries, or that to learn, it's really powerful to learn how to set boundaries to protect yourself. In relationships and probably in work. What does that look like? What comes to mind for you in terms of what we can do for or with employees to put that lesson to work?
I think it really just goes back to, I'll give you an example of how this has played out this week. And it really goes back to honoring the importance of when something doesn't feel right. And I know that sounds really simple, but that is something that I believe gets lost. And a lot of times in a work environment, depending on who's in the room, it's very easy if you don't have enough faith in your own intuition, or you're not confident enough to ask or to press, it's easy to fall into the energy of everybody else and thinking, well, they must know better. So whatever question I have or whatever thing I might be thinking is clearly naive because everybody else knows that what they're talking about. And that person is much smarter than I am. But what it's taught me is that if you ignore it, guaranteed, it will show up as some sort of monster somewhere else. And sometimes so much time has gone by that you forgot that you had some tiny little piece talking to you in your ear. And I think, so for example, and this is, we've come a long way for me to get here. We were looking at entering into a partnership recently with another organization. On paper, this is a perfect partnership. It really speaks to all of the healing properties that we can incorporate. And there's just no red flags on paper. There's nothing that's being said that's weird. So I have no reason to logically believe that I need to slow down and really pay attention to some of the logistics. No, nothing. I have not one bit of evidence. But I walked into the room with the entire team and I said, I know that we want this partnership to go right now. I'm asking you to trust me because I don't know why, but something feels off. And I can't pinpoint it. And I'm sorry. And I know this sounds cuckoo bananas, but I'm just asking you to trust me. And they did. And sure enough, there started to be some little things that started to happen that just didn't quite match up with what the original, like all of the everything that was coming out. And I think that those little things that started happening would have had to be ignored in the beginning. And all those little things easily could have turned into massive problems. But now it's at a pace that is really appropriate. We can still close on what we're trying to do. We can still have the same result. But it's that mindset of just being allowed to pay attention to it. And I was allowed that because the mentality that we absolutely stand by here as a result of all of these relationships and the foundations that have been built, that we see you as an individual first and an employee second. And if you as an individual feel like something is wrong or off or doesn't make sense, we value that so highly that we will stop the business of whatever is happening to honor that. And that's a very different feel from what I've ever experienced in any other work environment. And I know it's because of the relationships.
Love that as an example. I love the sort of call to really tune into the individual, because I do think that as a manager and a leader, that's something we often miss. And it's getting harder and harder, right? We're pulled in 1,000 directions to the point that we have people sitting right in front of us that we can't even see. And we miss those things, right? And so really dialing into it and following your instincts, when something feels off, ask the question. So one of the things I was thinking about as you are talking is this resonates deeply, this idea of, you know, protecting your self-worth and trusting yourself and then setting those boundaries to protect yourself. And I find it really interesting. I mean, I always pay close attention to this stuff. If someone met you, and I have known you for a number of years, if someone met you, they would be like, this is not a person that has an issue with self-worth, right? Back to kind of where we hinted at earlier, right? With the, you have a lot of confidence in how you show up in your role and all of that. And so I would say, I think this is a hard, hard thing for people. And so what I'm wondering is, if this has been so powerful for you and it's a lesson you've taken, how could we do this for employees? Like, I'm thinking, like, how do we teach employees to set boundaries around themselves to protect themselves? How do we, you know, encourage them to do that? Because I think oftentimes as employers, we're doing the exact opposite, right? We're taking more, we're going over boundaries, we're spreading beyond what we really should be in terms of when we reach out to them or how we are asking them to show up. So do you have any ideas about what that would look like in actual practice? Like, how do you do that?
In my experience, and I'm sure there's plenty of leaders and experts that probably have maybe even a better approach. I believe if you are in a leadership role, perceived or otherwise, if you're the actual leader in title or you're the person who's actually leading the team, one or the other, if you're in that position, the accountability is on you to model it. If you're modeling it, you are allowing for a pathway. I don't know that there would have been any other successful way for me to approach this if I wasn't modeling it. I don't think I can just tell someone, hey, you're worthy. If someone said that to me, I'd be like, this guy. And so you have to model it. And so I think that, for example, recently I was put in a very, very vulnerable position with someone who was openly going to hurt me. And it was just me and him alone. And he shared his intentions. Now, if this would have happened and it wasn't related to work, and it wasn't around the work environment, admittedly, Jason, because I am also struggling still with some old energy and self-worth and things like that, I don't know that I ever would have said anything to anyone. And all that would have done is contributed to that type of behavior being perpetuated and all of that. But because I wouldn't have seen it as something that was as important. Because I am in a leadership role, I felt differently about the accountability that I have to represent the entire organization. And if I wouldn't have said something, and so what I did was I brought it up to the board. We came up with whatever the plan was going to be. And I sat down with every single person on the team and said, this is what happened to me. And this is what happened. It was we're on the clock, which we're 365, 24/7. So everything is always on the clock, but it happened through work. And then took all of the steps that needed to happen to make this the safe work environment, to take care of myself at the same time too. So I'm modeling and I'm telling them, I'm going to therapy now. I feel better at, you know, and to the extent that they want to talk about it with me, I was also open about it. And what that did was allow some other people to come forward with things that they had not felt comfortable in saying. Now, here we are in a work office environment talking about extreme vulnerabilities, but that's how you do it. You have to model it as a leader, like I said, perceived or otherwise. You model it and you take accountability. That's why you're a leader. You're the one taking accountability because we like it. People in leadership roles, we like it. Give it to me. I'll take care of it. So that mindset, but put an overlaid on top of something that's really vulnerable and emotional and all of that. and you do that consistently, and to your earlier point, that consistency builds credibility. Now everybody has a path. Everybody has one person to watch, and then maybe one more person does it. And now we're well on our way for building a momentum of a culture that has that as part of who we are, and how now we can hold ourselves accountable for making sure that we're practicing those types of behaviors.
I love that call to action, right? The best way to, and especially for this, I mean, you've talked about, for you, it became real when you experienced it. And we can talk about these things, but until you know, a leader helps you experience it, or you experience it kind of through their experience, you see it role modeled, then that gives you both the guidance and the permission to step into that, to do that. If you see your leader set boundaries, then you're like, oh, now that maybe is something I can try, right? It gives you permission and some guidance and a model to follow. So that's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. And Lindsay Ray, thank you for being so vulnerable and open and joining me on this exploration. I appreciate you sharing about your relationships, and I'm really grateful to know you. Thank you for being here.
Me too. I feel the same way. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed today's episode. More importantly, I hope you learned something from the episode that can help you right away. Now, if you'd like to reflect on what you can learn from your own healthy, positive relationships to make work better, I've included a link in the description below where you can access and download what I call the relationship reflection exercise. This includes the same questions that I ask each of my guests to reflect on prior to our conversation on the webcast. Also, if you found today's episode valuable, I'd ask three quick favors of you. Number one, please like the episode. By liking the video and adding a comment if something spoke to you or stood out to you as really significant, you give me some great and valuable feedback, but you also help others find the video. I'd also ask you to subscribe to the channel. That does two important things. One, it makes sure that you won't miss any upcoming episodes, and it sends me the message that you like the kind of content that I'm creating here. And finally, please share this video with someone who you think might benefit. What better gift can you give someone than the gift of better relationships and a better work experience? I'm really grateful that you were here today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.